This is the introduction for the News Gazette, Part 1.
Hello, this is Atad Durakan with the News Gazette, dated Friday, August 3rd, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Salvation Army of Champaign County, It's a Calling. New leaders of local branch are here to change lives. This article is written by Deborah Pressey. There's a photo. It says New Salvation Army of Champaign County leaders Majors Randall and Sue Summit talk Friday about their new posting here while at the Red Shield building in Champaign. We begin with the article from Champaign. If you associate the Salvation Army mostly with the holiday season, red kettles and bell ringers, Majors Randall and Susan Summit hope to broaden your perspective. The Summits recently took over leadership of the Salvation Army of Champaign County after its former Corps officers, Majors Tom and Julie McDowell, left for a new assignment in Wisconsin. A married couple who came to Champaign County from Omaha, Nebraska, the Summit said they want people to know the Salvation Army has a broad mission to help people 365 days a year. We want people to know we're here to change lives, Randall Summit said. The Salvation Army has a more than century-old history in Champaign County, and it's both a church and social services agency that helps fill a wide array of needs, such as disaster relief, supportive services for veterans, and food and other basic necessities for the poor. Two of the functions of the Salvation Army in Omaha were a large food program and active basketball leagues for both kids and adults, while some adult team members being rival gang members, Randall Summit said. It was a safe place to blow off some steam, he said. Two of a kind, married for more than three decades, the Summits, both 54, have three grown children and two grandkids. They served in the Salvation Army in five other states before coming to Champaign County last month. Both are also second-generation Salvation Army Corps officers, and their daughter has made it three generations in the Summit family, following in both her parents' and grandparents' footsteps. Both Summits recalled moving around in their growing up years as their Corps officer parents were transferred to new assignments. Both also felt their own call to the ministry early on, they said. For us, this is not a career, it's a calling, Susan Summit said. It has to be. The Summits first met at a Salvation Army camp in Wisconsin at age 17. They were married at 19, went to Olivet Nazarene University at the same time to study practical ministry, and were both ordained in 1986. While most of their working years have gone to the Salvation Army, the couple did take outside jobs for a time when their children were younger. Being Salvation Army Corps officers consumes a lot of time, they said, and they needed some time to focus on their family. Sue Summit worked in child care, and her husband worked for a call center. Both feel the time outside the Salvation Army gave them a better perspective on what clients of the agency face every day, they said. While the Salvation Army doesn't pay large salaries, it does provide necessities such as housing for its Corps officers. When they stepped out for a time, the Summits recalled, they had nothing. It gave us a real sense of what the average person goes through every day, Randall Summit said. After they returned to the Salvation Army, the Summits faced another challenge together. Each was diagnosed with cancer, 4 days apart, in 2017. Randall Summit had throat cancer and his wife had breast cancer. Sometimes we were both so sick we couldn't even hold hands, Susan Summit recalled. Moving forward, both Summits are currently cancer-free and they're eager to form partnerships to grow the Salvation Army's mission in Champaign County, they said. Probably the least known part of the Salvation Army is the fact that it's a church, they said. The Salvation Army's church at 502 North Prospect Avenue, Champaign, has a small congregation and a building that doubles as a community center with a gym, basketball games, and archery. It also offers a weekday coffee and donut fellowship for older adults, Bible studies, a women's ministry, and a 10-piece brass band that plays at weekly Sunday services. Financial issues and the closing of the Salvation Army's Stepping Stone Shelter program were heavy, time-consuming burdens for their predecessors, the summit said. In fact, some debt, about $100,000, remains, but the McDowells worked really hard on that, Randall Summit said. He and his wife hope to build sales at the Salvation Army thrift shop store, form partnerships to expand basketball at the church building, and boost community involvement in the agency, he said. They would also love to involve more college students. Despite the debt, more volunteers are actually the biggest need, the summit said. On their wish list is adding volunteer greeters to welcome people as they come in and direct them to the services they need, Susan Summit said. She and her husband serve out of love for God, and they wear a lot of hats, she said. It's never boring, Randall Summit said. A sidebar of help wanted is also listed in the article. Top volunteer jobs that need to be filled at the Salvation Army of Champaign County include food pantry, client intake and shelf stocking helpers, maintenance and janitorial help, thrift store, fitting room attendants and help hanging and sorting donations, assisting the homeless through the canteen run, Red Kettle holiday season bell ringers, data entry, greeting and directing incoming clients and answering phones. There's a note that says to help, call volunteer coordinator John Jones at 217-373-7832. Our next story is entitled Illinois Law Enforcement Alarm System, $100,000 grant to aid in fight versus sex trafficking. There is a photograph, and it's entitled John Lines, Director of Operations for Utah-based Operation Underground Railroad, talks Thursday at the Illinois Law Enforcement Alarm System in Urbana. $100,000 grant to aid in fight for sex trafficking, money to help buy computers and software, by Mary Schenck, Urbana. As dozens of police detectives sat behind computers Thursday in Urbana, while learning the best ways to intercept child pornography peddlers and users, a retired federal agent who specialized in that for 25 years was around the corner announcing a $100,000 donation to help law enforcement in Illinois with that work. Our mission is to save children from sex trafficking internationally and in the U.S., said John Lines, operations president for Operation Underground Railroad. It's estimated that 40 million people worldwide, half of them children, are victims of sex trafficking, Lines said. What used to happen on dark street corners and brothels is now happening online, Lines said of the sophisticated network of child sex trafficking, where most of the abused are victimized by Western American males. The nonprofit group, funded by donations, teams up with law enforcement to find where those children victims are. Using former Navy SEALs, CIA agents, and special ops operatives, they arrange and carry out rescue missions, then work to reintegrate those victims into society wherever they are. The Salt Lake City-based organization has 14 full-time paid staff members. Since its inception in 2013, Lines said the group has participated in the rescue of about 1,500 children and the arrests of about 500 child predators. On Thursday, it announced that it will give the Illinois Law Enforcement Alarm System Foundation $100,000 to dole out equipment for Illinois police to use in the fight against sex trafficking. We don't want to see kids not saved because police don't have the resources, Lines said. ILEAS, that's I-L-E-A-S, Executive Director Jim Page, said the money will pay for laptop computers and specially designed software to ferret out child porn much like the officers from Illinois and Indiana were using Thursday at the ILEAS Training Center. "This stuff is expensive," Page said of the software, unsure exactly what can be bought with $100,000. The Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, part of State Attorney General Lisa Madigan's office, will decide what to buy with the gift and which police departments will get it, he said. "We are not paying for overtime or training," Page clarified. While Madigan's office can't accept gifts of cash, the ILEAS Foundation can and has the ability to buy in bulk, thus sharing the group's gift with more police departments. Lines said his organization is working to support law enforcement in 17 states in the United States, as well as in Thailand, Mexico, Colombia, Uganda, and India, to name a few other countries. "We are not some black ops vigilantes. We go in through the front door," Lyons said, adding that the group works only in areas where it is welcomed by law enforcement. "Furthermore, it works only in areas where there are aftercare resources to help the rescued children, some of whom have no idea how to function in regular society and whose own parents may have sold them into slavery." The private contractors who do the rescues, he said, are usually former law enforcement or military members with the right mindset and motives to deal with the ugly and unsavory side of child sex trafficking. "I thought I was made of metal. I've gone in as an operative myself," said Lyons, recalling a rescue at a brothel in Southeast Asia that included teenage girls the same age as his daughter. "I got home and I broke down. It breaks your heart and it's very difficult to recompose yourself." The group's promise, featured on its website, states, "To the children who we pray for daily, we say, your long night is coming to an end. Hold on. We are on our way. And to those captors and perpetrators, even you monsters, who dare offend God's precious children, we declare to you, be afraid, we are coming for you." "The life of one child is priceless," Lyons said. 1,500 children on a path to recovery is exciting. Moving on to our next story, also on the front page, Champaign County Board, District 10. Dems give official who lost primary second chance. There are two photos, two gentlemen, Storr and Stratton. This article is by Tim Mitchell. Urbana. In March's primary, Urbana residents voted Chris Storr off the Champaign County Board when his term expires in November. Thursday evening, his fellow Democrats gave the 69-year-old a second chance. In a 32-minute meeting held behind closed doors at the Urbana Public Library, a divided group of Democratic precinct committeemen slated Storr for the November ballot for District 10. The district has two seats, the one Storr lost to Tanisha King Taylor in March's primary, and the one made available last month following the resignation of Robert King. So, if King Taylor beats her Republican opponent, David Weisiger, on November 6th, she could be seated alongside the man she defeated 8 months earlier. Committee Secretary Laurel Prussing said 8 of the 10 participating committeemen Thursday voted for Storr over challenger Cedric Stratton. Since the group actually uses a weighted voting system, Prussing said Storr officially emerged victorious by a 5-to-1 margin. Storr is unopposed on the November ballot, as of now anyway. Stratton, a 30-year-old summer arts camp counselor for the Urbana Park District, told the News Gazette he was disappointed by Thursday's vote and has not ruled out running for a seat as an independent. "I'm not certain yet," Stratton said. "I plan to speak to some people and figure out what my options are." Stratton described himself as a fourth-generation resident of Champaign County, adding, "I thought it was my time to do this. I wanted to do something for the community." Robert King's wife, Angela King, called on committee members Thursday to consider the political newcomer. We have been here in this community for 7 years, and when we first moved into District 10, we were the only family of color on the block, she said Thursday. We saw the power of having representation from people of color at the table. I want this group to consider slating another person of color for District 10. I think that's extremely vital. I look around this room, and it's mostly white people. I hope you understand the importance of continuing having representation that is different from what historically has been at the table. The precinct committeemen did not take a roll call vote prior to moving into closed session and sending the public, including the one media member on hand, out of the room. We are a political PAC, so the Open Meetings Act does not apply to us, said Miriam R. Rahim, chairman of the County Democratic Central Committee. Meanwhile, fellow Democrat and Champaign County Board Chairman C. Pius Weibel said he had not been notified about Thursday's meeting and attended only after learning of it during a Thursday afternoon phone call from the News Gazette. I'm not surprised I wasn't told about it, Weibel said. I am surprised there was not a public announcement. The meeting came less than 3 months after an inter-party dispute surrounding the process used to fill Josh Hartke's seat in District 6. Arguing that the short notice given for that meeting, in which Charles Young of Champaign emerged as the recommended replacement, was a violation of party bylaws, Weibel rejected the nomination and called for another vote. Attorney Tracy Douglas was declared the victor in the second vote, which Young did not attend. Douglas was sworn in as Hartke's successor on June 21st. Storr said he was grateful to receive the support of the majority of District 10 precinct committeemen. Priority number one for him, the preservation of the Mahomet Aquifer. I want to do what I can to protect the sole source of water for our area, he said. Storr said his second priority will be providing space for GED lessons for inmates at the county jail. There is only one meeting room in the entire satellite jail, and it is not always available, he said. If elected, Storr would serve on the county board until 2020. Turning to the second section, Section B, the local section. Starting on the left side of the paper. The health reporter is in. Each week, longtime health reporter Deb Pressey answers questions on our website. A complete transcript is available on newsgazette.com. That's news-gazette.com. Question: how well do local hospitals do in treating sepsis? For much of last year, both hospitals in Urbana did better than the national average in delivering timely and appropriate care for sepsis. From January through September 2017, 65% of patients at what's now known as OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center and 61% of patients at Carle Foundation Hospital received appropriate care for severe sepsis and septic shock, compared to the national average of 49%, according to new data added to Medicare's Hospital Compare website for thousands of hospitals. At what's now OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville, the percentage was below the national average at 22%. Both that hospital and OSF Heart of Mary in Urbana were under prior ownership by Presence Health during the sepsis treatment data collection period last year. Data submitted for all three hospitals was based on a sample of patient cases according to Hospital Compare. Sepsis is an extreme reaction to an infection, and it's considered to be a life-threatening emergency. When it's not treated promptly, it can damage organs in the body, and the risk of death rises when it progresses to septic shock. These kinds of infections, most often linked with sepsis, are infections of the lungs, urinary tract, skin, and gut, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Signs of sepsis can include a combination of any of these symptoms: a high heart rate, low body temperature, confusion, shivering, clammy or sweaty skin, shortness of breath, and extreme pain or discomfort. Most at risk are older adults and people with weakened immune systems. Both Carle Foundation Hospital and OSF Healthcare have been initiating changes aimed at more quickly diagnosing and treating sepsis cases, spokesmen for both systems said. That included staff education, flagging people at higher risk for sepsis in patient records, and empowering nurses to trigger sepsis alerts based on patients' conditions and vital signs. OSF Healthcare recognizes the importance of tracking and preventing sepsis and septic shock in our patients, spokeswoman Libby Allison said. To that end, we have implemented many different initiatives across the ministry, OSF system, to help improve recognition and timely treatment of patients at risk for sepsis. Dr. Brad Weir, Associate Medical Quality Officer for Carle, said Carle has had a sepsis committee meeting monthly, which has also initiated process changes, among them improving the turnaround times for lab tests related to sepsis. Carle is also participating with the University of Illinois on research looking at sepsis data from multiple hospitals, he said. Nationally, 1.5 million people wind up with sepsis each year, and 250,000 of them die from it, according to the CDC. More statistics to be aware of. 1 in 3 people who die in a hospital had sepsis. 80% of sepsis cases begin outside a hospital. 7 out of 10 people developing sepsis recently used healthcare services or had chronic medical conditions that require frequent healthcare. Moving to the center of the paper, it's Clergy Corner, a weekly feature spotlighting area religious leaders, both in the pulpit and out of it, by staff writer Tim Mitchell. There is a photograph of Pastor Leah Pogemiller at the First United Methodist Church in Champaign on Wednesday. "The Reverend Unger had seen it in me all along," is the quote. Leah Pogemiller's earliest memory of CU goes back to her piccolo playing days when she and the rest of Joliet West High's marching band would compete with other schools at Memorial Stadium. Four decades later, she's back, only this time for more than a single Saturday. She now goes by Pastor Pogemiller, newly installed at downtown Champaign's First United Methodist Church, following a 7-year stretch serving as district superintendent for 79 churches. "We caught up this week with the fan of Jane Austen novels, trips to Israel, and classical music. For much more of his conversation with the Reverend Pogemiller, go to news-gazette.com. "On her first time being behind the pulpit, I remember being at Grace United Methodist Church in Joliet, which was the church of most of my childhood. My mom and dad were setting up their Sunday school classroom for the next day. A lot of times we children would wander around the church. I found myself preaching, so to speak, from the pulpit. The pastor's study was not far outside of the sanctuary, and he saw me. He draped one of his robes on me, and I, of course, was swimming in it. He got a little stool and pulled it over into the pulpit. You could see my head over the pulpit, and he coached me on things." On the first inkling that she'd become a minister, "I was going to college here at the University of Illinois and as an undergraduate. It was 1980. I happened to run into a longtime childhood friend in front of the old McDonald's on Green Street. We had been in Sunday school together and went to the same church. He was going to Joliet Junior College and was getting ready to transfer to mechanical engineering here at the U of I. He asked what I was doing at the U of I, and I said, I want to be a pastor. I had not consciously thought that or pursued ministry before. I didn't know why I just said that. Now I think it was God. I had transferred my church membership to the Urbana Wesley United Methodist Church, the one with the tall steeple. I told my pastor there, the Reverend Paul Unger. I was shocked by what I had said to my friend. He didn't seem at all shocked. He had seen it in me all along. On her first Bible, my maternal grandmother gave it to me for my 10th birthday. It was around Easter time, and we went out to visit both sets of my grandparents who lived about 7 miles apart from each other, outside of Burlington, Iowa. I was looking forward to start reading it, but my paternal grandfather was just engrossed in it. I was irritated at the time, but it made me want to read it more when I was finally able to head home with the Bible myself. And the final comment from this article. On the movie, that's the first on her favorites list, Witness with Harrison Ford. My favorite scene is when Harrison Ford's character is in danger for his life. There is an exterior shot of a hill at the farm where he is at, and all of these Amish people of all ages come up over the hill to witness, to stand up for what they believe in and not hide from it. As a community, they confront the danger. I've always been interested in the Amish community. All right, that wraps up the clergy corner. There is a notice here at the bottom that says, Noah Pastor, you think ought to be featured here? We take requests at jdalessio@newsgazette.com. We have a little bit of time before this segment ends, and there is a photograph entitled Mow Free Field. And it's about workers from International Sports Surfaces of Barrington stretch out a roll of field turf on Thursday at Tommy Stewart Field at Centennial High School in Champaign. Unit 4 is replacing grass with turf ahead of the 2018 football season, which kicks off August 24th. At newsgazette.com, visit our website later for Anthony Zillis' drone coverage of Thursday's fieldwork in Champaign. And the photograph shows several workmen pulling the turf over the subsurface and a rolling machine, rolling the seams flat, and the turf looks quite beautiful. Okay, we've come to the end of the first part. We'll be taking a short break now, and we'll return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Friday, August 3rd. Please stay tuned.